911, where is your emergency?
We are on 125 West North. We came upon an individual that is on the bridge, like laying here injured.
You said he's injured and needs an ambulance?
Yeah, he definitely needs an ambulance. He's alert, but he's not, like, he's not coherent. He's not responding. I don't know if it's drugs. I don't know if he's injured.
I was working a 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. shift. It was mid-January in Northeast Indiana. It's cold, it's windy. We've had some rains for several days, so we had a lot of flooding in the area. The only thing that dispatch put out was that there was a man down in the roadway.
So you had no idea what you were getting into?
I had no idea what I was coming on. When I first got to the scene here that night, this is kind of how I approached it.
This almost sort of seems like a road to nowhere, really.
Yeah, there's really nowhere else to go.
And so what can you see?
So at 2 o'clock in the morning, you see absolutely nothing. There was a vehicle that was pulled up off the side of the road, which was the people that had found him. And then as I came up onto the bridge, he was laying right around here.
What are you doing out here in the cold?
We were able to remove his wallet out of his pocket, and then I see the name on the ID, which was Shea Breyer.
Breyer, what happened to you?
The only thing I'm really getting out of him as far as a response is just moans and groans. There was a little bit of blood underneath his head, but he'd been, you know, hitting his head on the concrete. It was probably another 10, 15 minutes after I got on scene before medics even arrived. They took him straight to the ambulance.
What happens with Shea after that?
He's immediately transported by ambulance to Adams Memorial Hospital. It was at the hospital where they ended up finding the bullet wound in his back. There was no exit wound. It was actually in his heart. He passed away.
I got a phone call from our sheriff who said, you know, we had a murder. My name's Wes Schemenauer. I'm the elected prosecutor in Jay County. The first thing you do is you start talking to family, those close to him. Who is this person?
He was one of a kind. He was the best brother I could ever have. He was fun, very sweet, very caring.
Fun-loving and goofy.
He was a good kid. He had a kind heart.
Everybody that we talked to, we asked if they would have any idea of who would want Shea dead.
Shea didn't have enemies.
We talked to his coworkers, probably six or seven of them, and not a single one of them could think of anyone that would want to do him any harm at all.
You start investigating, and you end up arresting not one person, not two people, but three people. Is that how you expected this to go?
No, not at all. The three individuals that were involved, that would have been the last thing on our mind.
Normally, when you have a case like this, they've at least been on the radar, and these individuals were not on the radar at all.
Did you think when this goes public, this town's gonna be shocked?
Absolutely.
On Sunday, January 12th, 2020, when 31-year-old Shea Breyer didn't show up for church, Pastor Angela Smiley knew something was wrong. She had just seen him the night before.
We served a noodle dinner. He's there walking the old ladies out. We were last ones in the church. He said, I'll beat you here in the morning. I'm like, you always do. And when I came up over the hill and didn't see his truck, I'm like, this isn't good. For weeks and weeks and months, he was always the first one at the church, always. Shea Breyer was not late.
In Jay County, Indiana, word travels fast. It wasn't long before Shea's aunt, Tiffany McLaughlin, and his grandmother, Sharon Taylor, heard Shea was missing.
I started calling the hospitals, the sheriff's department, everybody, and nobody would give me any information. Nobody.
But then Shea's roommate called Tiffany, letting her know police were there. When Tiffany arrived at Shea's home, an officer told her the unthinkable.
He said that Shea had been shot, and I said, well, was he okay? And he said, no, he died on the operating table.
Shay's mother, Tracy Havel, was living all the way in Hawaii at the time. Her sister and mother called her to deliver the news.
I'm like, no. I mean, I think I must have screamed so loud. We're in shock.
Sydney Havel, Shay's half-sister, was only 17.
I remember my mom just fell over on the couch, basically like crying and screaming. I still can't believe it to this day. It doesn't even seem real.
At that point, did anyone have any idea what happened to Shay?
No, we had no idea what happened to Shay.
Ben Schwartz was one of the lead detectives assigned to the case.
Jay County is a very rural farming community. It's certainly not like working in a big city where it's back-to-back calls. And as soon as this happened, it was a pretty big deal. It's isolated where he was found. We wondered how he got there, and we just had to start from ground zero.
Ground zero meant digging into who Shay Breyer was and what he had been up to. He was born in Indiana, but was raised in Hawaii by his mom and stepdad.
What sort of kid was Shay?
A little rascal. He was very polite. He would open doors. He was fun. He loved his G.I. Joes. He always wanted to be in the military from a really small age.
So it was no surprise when, after high school, Shay joined the Navy. And it was also no surprise when, after he was discharged, he returned to live in Jay County.
Shay was always an Indiana boy. He loved the tractors. He loved all the land.
And that's where he wanted to put down roots.
He really wanted to have a girlfriend, get married, and have a family.
But things didn't quite happen in that order. In 2018, Tracy got a phone call from her son.
He's like, hey, Mom, guess what? You're going to be a grandma. I was like, what? I didn't even know you had a girlfriend.
The future mother of his child was Esther Jane Stephen, a local high school softball coach who also ran a daycare and went by the name EJ.
I don't think they were boyfriend and girlfriend. You know, I think it was just one of those things.
In January 2019, Shay and EJ's daughter was born. It was only after her birth that the two decided to start dating. They soon were engaged, but Shay's family felt it was forced.
They weren't all lovey-dovey, for, you know, the lack of a better word.
I tried to tell him, is this how you want to live your life with someone that's really not who you're meant to be with?
You felt that?
Oh, definitely, because they did not have a connection.
They must have sensed something, because in September 2019, just weeks before the wedding, EJ called it off.
Was he disappointed?
Yes, because he really wanted a family.
It was around that time that Angela says Shay began coming to church.
He needed God, and he needed a friend. He started hanging out with men in our church that were active fathers, and he wanted that for his daughter.
But Angela and Shay's family say, for reasons unbeknownst to them, EJ made it difficult.
After the engagement is broken off, what sort of access does Shay have to his daughter?
He doesn't.
None. He went quite a long time without seeing her.
And he was trying to see her?
Yeah.
That's why he finally got a lawyer.
Shay told his mother that when EJ found out, she wasn't happy.
He told me. She said to him, if you go through with this, you'll be sorry.
But that didn't stop Shay. In November 2019, he filed this court document seeking to establish paternity and to provide custody, support, and parenting time.
He wanted to provide for her, and he just really wanted to have some visitation.
He also wanted his daughter to have his last name, something EJ had decided against.
Why was it important for Shay to be in his daughter's life?
Shay really did not know his dad. He just did not want to be his biological dad. He wanted to have a good relationship with his kids and be a good role model.
But 2 months later, before the case made its way to court, Shay was murdered. And Tracy and Tiffany suspected EJ may have had something to do with it.
Because there wasn't anyone else.
But as it turns out, there would be other suspects. Less than 24 hours after Shea Breyer died, Detective Ben Schwartz and his partner called E.J. Stephen, Shea's ex-fiancé and the mother of his child, into the sheriff's office.
We talked to her and told her about what happened to Shea.
Unfortunately, this morning we were called out because Shea had sustained some injuries. They were life-threatening injuries and he did not make it.
She really didn't have a whole lot to say.
Did you find her reaction curious?
Yeah. I would have expected a little bit of emotion out of her, but that didn't happen. And I would have expected a lot more questions, but she really didn't ask too many questions at all.
And Detective Schwartz says that wasn't the only thing that stuck out.
She said that the last time she talked to Shea would have been the week prior.
But he knew she was lying. Shea's phone records revealed she was the last person to call him at around midnight, within hours of him being found on that bridge.
That was a huge red flag.
A red flag, but not proof she committed murder. Detectives chose not to confront her about the phone records that day.
I'll give you my card, and if there's something you hear that you might think would spark our interest, give us a call.
There was still a lot of work to be done, a lot of questions to be answered. And the next day, a call from this woman would help investigators out.
She unloaded and told us a lot of interesting stuff.
Christy Sybray has known E.J. Stephen for years. She used to umpire softball games that E.J. played in and took her kids to the daycare that E.J. ran out of this church.
How would you describe her?
Very quiet, great with kids. She's very involved in the community activities.
Over the years, Christy says she became a mentor of sorts to EJ.
She always would just stop by here and there, say hi, or just stop in if something was bothering her.
Christy had never met Shea Breyer, but she knew he was the father of EJ's daughter. And when she learned he was murdered, she started to panic.
I just dropped everything. And I just started screaming. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And then I contacted a friend that was still in the city police department. And I said, I need to talk. Pick me up now at work.
Christy, a former police officer, soon found herself inside a Jay County Sheriff's Office interview room.
Start at the beginning and share with us what you want to get off your chest.
She began by telling Detective Schwartz and his partner that she received a call from EJ a few days prior to Shea's death. She said EJ asked her to babysit that weekend, something she had never asked her to do before.
And I'm like, yeah, not a problem. So all day Saturday, I'm like, okay, what time am I getting her? I had not heard anything. We were like getting down for the night. About 10:30, here she comes with the child.
It was Saturday, January 11th, 2020, just hours before Shea was found shot.
She goes, okay, I'll be back in a little bit. And I'm like, okay, what are you doing? And she goes, oh, we're just going out. She came in by herself.
Christy says EJ didn't return until around 1 a.m.
I had heard her open the back door, so I got up and I met her there. And I said, EJ, what were you doing? She was nothing. And she was real standoffish. I said, come on, EJ, what were you doing? And she goes, I can't tell you, but I'm sure you'll hear about it in the paper in the next couple days. And she left.
You must have been thinking about that all night.
Yes.
But that was just the beginning of what Christy told police. She said that in the months leading up to Shea's murder, EJ came over a lot, and she wasn't alone.
Shelby was always in the car with EJ.
Shelby is Shelby Heaston. She was 18 years old. EJ was 29 and used to be her high school softball coach. After Shelby graduated, she became EJ's assistant coach at another nearby high school. Just over the border in Fort Recovery, Ohio. Shelby also worked at the daycare with EJ.
Did you think it was odd that here's EJ hanging out with Shelby?
Mm-hmm.
There's a good 10 years between the two.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody thought it was odd.
From what I have been told, they were pretty well inseparable.
Detectives had heard Shelby's name before. Jay's family had mentioned her.
Shelby was always around in the picture. I think there was some major jealousy between Shelby and Shay. You know, he never came out and said it, but he kind of insinuated things.
What did he insinuate?
He thought maybe there was something more going on.
More than a friendship?
Possibly.
And Shay wasn't the only one who suspected something.
I just assumed that maybe they were a couple.
EJ and Shelby would later deny being anything more than friends. Christy told investigators that the two began stopping by shortly after Shay filed that court document to establish paternity.
Shelby pretty much stayed with the child, and EJ would sit with me at the kitchen table.
And she said EJ wanted advice.
She just asked me, what do I do? Because I have been divorced. She didn't want to share the baby. That was her baby. That was her child. Some of the conversations at the table would be, how can we get rid of him so we don't have to go to court? And I'm like, how do you get rid of him? You're not going to get rid of him.
Christy insists she didn't think anything at the time.
Anybody who goes through a breakup, don't think they didn't say, oh, I wish he was gone. Or I wish he was dead. But do we act on it? And that's what I'm thinking. I've been divorced twice. I'll tell you, I probably said it.
And Christy says she had that same mindset when, over time, the conversations grew more detailed and various methods were discussed.
I just really thought she was venting. I did not think this was for real.
But when Christy heard Shay was murdered, she says she immediately viewed all those conversations in a different light.
At that point, do you think EJ is involved in this somehow?
Yes.
And she knew she had to go to police.
I didn't even think about it. But as a police officer standpoint, I felt like I failed. Because how did I miss this? How did I miss these signs? I could have prevented this, and I didn't. Because I didn't think she could.
And this was your opportunity to do something?
Yeah. Sorry.
It was just kind of unbelievable.
After Christy was done talking, Detective Schwartz says there was one thing on his mind.
We've got to get EJ back in here.
So you say, come on in, EJ.
Yep. We just want to know the truth and what happened to Shay.
On January 14th, 2020, just 2 days after Shay Breyer was murdered, EJ Stephen was back inside the Jay County Sheriff's Office. Detective Ben Schwartz and his partner first confronted her about those phone records, which revealed she called Shay shortly before he died, something she had previously been dishonest about.
Midnight, you called his phone. We just kind of wondered how that conversation went.
I did not talk to him. I do recall. I
butt dialed him. She said that she butt dialed Shay.
Did you believe her?
No. We kind of pressed her on that a little bit, and then finally she said, okay, yeah, we talked, but it wasn't for very long.
EJ insisted she didn't see Shay that night, but detectives didn't believe her.
You know what, hell of a lot more you're telling us, and we will find out.
And soon, they told her her friend, Shelby Heaston, was also being questioned.
This is not a game.
Her demeanor kind of changed a little bit, and it was a turning point.
In a cool and calm tone, EJ cracked and began to tell detectives what happened that night, starting with how she dropped her daughter off at Christy Cybray's. She told them Shelby was in the car waiting. From there, we retrace their steps based on EJ's account.
How does she tell you the night unfolds?
From there, they came to the church. At the time, it was a daycare also.
It was the daycare where EJ and Shelby worked. EJ said they had to move furniture before church the next day, and that another friend, 18-year-old Hannah Kanapke, met them there. Hannah also sometimes worked at the daycare, and EJ used to coach her in softball too.
So this is the daycare.
What do they do here after they move that furniture?
After they moved the furniture, they were planning on how to get rid of Shay, basically.
She said earlier that day, she had picked Shelby's rifle up from Shelby's house, and that while in the daycare parking lot, Shelby got the gun out and fired a round. According to EJ, after Shelby fired that shot, all three of them got into Hannah's parents' van with a rifle in the back.
So where did they go from the daycare?
From the daycare, they drove around, still discussing whether or not they should follow through with killing Shay. And somewhere along the line, that EJ called Shay.
We asked him if he wanted to come for a ride with us, and he came.
After they picked Shay up, with Shelby driving, EJ said they headed to that bridge.
So about what time do they get out here?
I think it was right around 1 o'clock in the morning. They stop the van right over here. EJ and Shay get out of the van.
Next thing I know.
What happened? EJ, we're right there. We are, we're right here. Finish it.
I'm trying to remember.
You shot him. Did Shelby shoot him?
And there was no tears or any remorse that I saw.
She's talking about the father of her child being shot in the back next to her.
Right. Yeah, it was shocking.
EJ told detectives she didn't know Shelby was going to shoot Shay, despite conversations they had had earlier.
You or her?
Hammer, like you talked about. Right. Beating him, I mean, talked about it, and then it was just like, I mean, let's just do it.
Yeah.
Joking, obviously, and then joking, like,
but detectives believe EJ knew exactly what was going to happen that night. They believe she cold-heartedly planned it, and that the cruelty continued after Shay was shot, because when police located Shay, his cell phone was nowhere to be found.
Where's his cell phone at? Okay. Is Shelby going to tell us the same thing, that she doesn't know where the phone is? Because the phone is somewhere. Did she throw it in the river? Who threw it in the river? You did?
EJ said that after they began driving away from the bridge that night, they turned around.
They drive right past them through here, and they stop right there where my car is sitting. And EJ and Shelby get out.
Scared that he could call 911?
Yeah.
Okay.
EJ said she knew Shay was still alive. He would lay on that bridge, helpless, for about an hour before he was found clinging to life.
Okay, you are under arrest for the murder of Shay Breyer.
EJ Stephen was arrested and charged with murder. Down the hall, only after being confronted with what EJ told police, Shelby Heasted admitted pulling the trigger.
I wasn't going to do anything. I really wasn't. Honestly, I feel like I just blacked out and it just happened.
Shelby was arrested and charged with murder. Later that day, detectives flew to Iowa, where Hannah Kanapke had returned to college. She too eventually admitted involvement. Hannah told detectives she didn't know what she was getting into when she met up with EJ and Shelby that night, but that the conversation took a turn.
Okay. They talked about shooting him.
At what point was a decision made to take your van?
Basically, they didn't want to take EJ's because it was too suspicious. I was scared to tell them no. I was just nervous.
Hannah was also later booked on a murder charge. The case soon hit the news.
A third person has been arrested in the fatal shooting of a 31-year-old Jake County man.
And even though Shay's family had suspected EJ's involvement, they were horrified to learn the details.
To find out that there were two other people that were involved, it was like, what?
It was shocking. I think it really did shock the community.
But despite those three taped interrogations, the case was far from over, because EJ, Shelby, and Hannah would all plead not guilty, and it would be up to prosecutors to secure convictions, starting with EJ.
I felt like going into it that it was, okay, she's guilty, she's gonna be found guilty. And then I'm like, wait a second, what's happening here? I was scared.
In March 2021, EJ Stephen was first to go on trial for Shay Breyer's murder. Wes Schemenauer and Zach Landers prosecuted the case.
It was intense. It was standing room only most days. We had lots of interested folks just wanting to come and see what was going on.
Shay's mom, Tracy, traveled from Hawaii to attend.
That was my first time really ever being in a courthouse.
It was also her first time hearing and seeing much of the evidence, including that dash cam video.
It was horrible. It was just this long car ride. I think I had bruises on my legs because I just was squeezing my legs so bad. And then when he pulls up there to the bridge, I could hear him.
Breyer, what happened to you?
I would love to have been there and hold his hand. You know, I wish.
Even though EJ didn't pull the trigger, prosecutors sought to convince a jury that she orchestrated Shay's murder.
This was all for her benefit. I think she saw this as a way to eliminate a problem in her life.
They told the jury about that court petition Shay filed, and they argued it infuriated EJ, so much so that she and her friend Shelby Heaston devised a plan to kill him. They pointed to EJ's own words. The jury heard her interrogation in full.
Why did Shelby shoot him?
We talked about it in a joking manner, like, I think it was easy if he was gone.
She didn't want Shay involved in her life or in her daughter's life.
The prosecution's star witness was Christy Sybray. She testified about those visits she said EJ and Shelby made to her house. One discussion, she said, was particularly alarming in hindsight.
I go, you couldn't shoot somebody. I think that's what I said to EJ. And Shelby goes, oh, I could.
And Christy testified about another conversation that she had also shared with police.
They did talk about how they one time did put pills in his tea and tried to OD him. So I crushed up ibuprofen, I believe. And he did drink the whole glass, but nothing happened to him.
Did you say to her, what are you doing?
I'm like, are you serious? I didn't even believe her because I just could not see her doing that.
Prosecutors argued Christie's testimony was proof of planning.
They've discussed it. They've even maybe tried to kill him before. This wasn't just a thing that happened on a whim without, you know, EJ's knowledge.
But the defense countered that prosecutors had it all wrong and put EJ on the stand. She declined our request for an interview, and her trial attorney has since died.
What did she tell the jury?
That she was essentially shocked and surprised that Shelby did this, that all of this talking and planning had been done as a joke.
As for those pills in Shay's drink, EJ testified that it was Shelby's idea and that she only went along with it because she thought it was an innocent chemistry experiment. The defense placed all the blame on Shelby and alleged that unbeknownst to EJ, Shelby wanted the baby and EJ all to herself, and that Shay was in the way. Shelby had told detectives how much she disliked him.
I didn't want her to be with him at all. I was like, that little girl would be just fine without him.
The defense claimed EJ had no reason to want Shay dead, and said that EJ and Shay were talking about getting back together that night on the bridge. Prosecutors rejected that.
She's the one who went and got the gun from Shelby's house. They took the gun with them to the church. They test fired the gun at the church. To me, you can say you thought it was a joke all you want. In my view of it, the minute you take that gun out and you fire it to see how loud it's going to be, that's like, okay, now this is real, right?
But EJ offered an explanation. She said Shelby would often go hunting, so she didn't think anything of it when Shelby fired that round in the church parking lot. But what about what EJ did after the murder?
EJ retrieved this guy's cell phone and threw it in the creek for the sole purpose of him not being able to call for help.
Remember, she admitted that to police.
I'm scared that he could call 911.
Yeah. His only lifeline was that cell phone, possibly. Who knows whether he could have had the wherewithal to call for help at that point. And you left him there to die in the cold.
But on the stand, EJ said she only threw Shay's phone in a moment of frustration after being unable to unlock it to call 911. She told the jury her own phone was dead.
It's just nonsense. There were two other girls with her. You're not going to convince me that their phones were dead. You're not really going to be able to convince me that Esther's phone was dead either. And on top of that, they passed so many different places that were open that they could have stopped in and called for help.
As the defense wound down, EJ's attorney maintained EJ had no idea Shelby planned to shoot Shay and drew the jury's attention to where EJ told police she was standing at the time.
You were standing there face to face with them?
The defense argued if EJ knew Shelby was going to shoot Shay, why would she put herself in the line of fire? Shay's family worried jurors would be swayed by EJ's testimony.
I thought we were going into this and it's a no-brainer. I mean, she did it. She's going to be found guilty. And yeah, I mean, it was scary.
The trial spanned 3 days and then the case went to the jury.
Nerve-wracking is an understatement. We were in the office Monday morning quarterbacking ourselves, you know, like you always do.
1 hour of deliberations passed, then two.
The longer the jury is out, the more of that second guessing comes into play.
Then they received a call. A verdict was in.
The heart rate goes up to about a million. The palms start sweating. You're just on pins and needles.
We were all three holding hands and just holding our breath to see what was going to happen.
As a prosecutor, you grow close to these people. You see just the unbelievable amount of suffering that they're going through as a family, and you want to do your best for them. You want to get them justice for Shay.
After nearly 2.5 hours of deliberations, Shay's family finally heard the word they were waiting for, guilty.
What is that feeling like?
Like a big relief?
That much is over.
EJ Stephen was later sentenced to 55 years in prison, the recommended sentence for murder in Indiana. Shay's pastor, Angela Smiley, was there when the sentence was handed down.
You would think that you would see some kind of repentance. I didn't see it at all, nothing.
3 months after that, in August 2021, Shelby Heaston went on trial. Shay's mom, Tracy, was in court again, sitting through all the evidence for a second time, including that dash cam video.
Tracy sat right there and watched it again.
And didn't cry. She said she didn't want them to have the satisfaction that they had hurt her so badly.
You were really thinking that?
Yeah. I was, no, they're not gonna, I'm not letting my head hang. I'm holding it up as high as I can. This is for Shay. It was hard, but
This is the boy you gave birth to.
Yeah. It just makes me so mad. He didn't do anything wrong.
At Shelby's trial, the defense called no witnesses, but argued Shay's death was unintentional. Shelby, her parents, and her attorney chose not to speak with us.
Her defense was more of it was a mistake, it was an accident, that her intent to kill wasn't there.
How did they go about trying to prove that?
Well, if you look at what she said in her interview, they tried to keep pointing to this, "I blacked out," type of language.
Honestly, I feel like it just blacked out and it just happened.
They tried to just essentially characterize what she said as not technically admitting to murder, not technically admitting to shooting at Shay, but simply just pulling the trigger.
Is there any way that this could have been an accident?
No. You don't take out your gun and point it at anybody if you're not intending to kill them.
And to prove this was no accident, prosecutors pointed to this text message that Shelby sent EJ about a month before Shay's murder. It reads, "I'm killing that bastard with my own two hands."
They've talked about this together for a long time.
And one of the things that was odd to me, if you look at that text message, is EJ's name in Shelby's phone is Bay.
Bay as in a term of endearment.
Right.
Why do you think Shelby was willing to do this?
You know, it's speculation. She had a lot of animosity toward Shay, as evidenced by what she said in her interview about him.
I didn't want her to abuse him at all.
And she was very angry at Shay over his attempts to interfere with or insert himself into the daughter's life. And so, I think that sort of fed into that maybe power dynamic with EJ.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a huge age difference, you know, between EJ and Shelby. I think it's clear that Shelby looked up to EJ and, you know, wanted her approval. I think she had her own feelings. I think she had maybe some manipulation there as well.
At the end of her 3-day trial, Shelby Heastend was also convicted of murder. At her sentencing hearing, unlike EJ, she apologized to Shay's family.
Shelby was looking right at me, and she said she was sorry. And I believed her. I mean, it didn't change anything, but I believed her. No, she had the chance. She had the chance.
Shelby Heastend received the same sentence as EJ Stephen, 55 years in prison. For Shay's family, the thought of a third trial was too much to bear.
I didn't want to go to another trial.
Well, I don't think my mom could have handled another one.
I don't think any of us could have. I mean, it was awful.
They approached prosecutors, and ultimately a plea deal was reached. Hannah Kanafke and her attorneys also declined our request for an interview. In September 2021, she pleaded guilty to voluntary manslaughter in exchange for a sentence that could see her released as early as July 2026. At her sentencing, she also apologized to Shay's family.
I remember telling her in my impact statement that, you know, you weren't the mastermind, you weren't the shooter, but you were still involved in it. You were still involved in Shay's murder.
And I said you could have made a difference. You could have said no. You could have said, let's get out of here.
But for not one person, but three people made the decision to murder him. Right, three opportunities for someone to do the right thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And none of them took that opportunity.
Very well put.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very well put.
Shay Breyer's grave sits next to the little white church that he loved. His gravestone says Daddy. A role his sister says he was so looking forward to fulfill.
My brother wanted to be there for his baby. He loves her so, so much. And he has the best view right now of her. even though he's in heaven, he is laughing. He's probably giving her wind tickles. And he's keeping an eye out on her.